Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how deeply grateful I am you chose to spend a little time with me here. We're going to be looking at control. This radio program, this satsang as we like to call it, is for Saturday, August the 12th, 2017, and I want to thank you for listening. I want to remind you once again, as always, that these radio programs, as well as our TV programs, are made available to you via my loving sponsors who make all this possible with their monthly and quarterly donations. And I'm hoping that you might join them and show a sense of gratitude towards what we offer here on Aspire. It is only through your tax-deductible donations that we are able to continue making Aspire and doing all that we do. It's an honor to do this. Believe me, it is. But it always, as usual, costs a lot of money. And it is only through your tax-deductible gifts that we are able to sustain our radio and television offerings to you. So if you are abiding in any of this and getting something out of it, I hope that you will for sure help us and keep us on the air. Your gift is deeply appreciated. I will send you a receipt for your donation. And if you go to aspire.org and go look at support, it's in the middle of the page there at the top, and click on that little icon that says Support Aspire, you will see a drop-down menu that says Why Support Aspire, which is a good question. And if you go and read that, it'll tell you where your donations go, how they are used, how to sign up, and why it's important to give, which is something that eludes most people and becomes the biggest problem we have, believe it or not. We don't want to admit it, but it is true. Everybody wants to control their life. Everybody wants to be immune to their unkindness, their disinterest, their indifference to anything that sounds spiritual. I hear people say, well, it sounds like philosophy or a cult or whatever. Everybody's ready to dismiss inner work as being maybe ineffective or unnecessary. And we are living in a culture and a society that now, instead of embracing the things that would help us, don't anymore. We are not into embracing the meaning of life or the meaning of ourselves upon the face of our living. We're very susceptible to our pettiness, our pride, our vanity. And we are actually now proud of these things. It just shocks me. It does. I cannot believe a lot of the things I'm hearing. So I get all these little emails from people from time to time about controlling their life. And it's interesting, in the last 6 months, I've received more than ever before. And I thought I'd grab three today and maybe serve you well. At least that's my intent. The first question comes from Chase. He does not tell me where he lives. Chase, I want to begin by saying one thing. I want to thank you for your kind comments. I always want to thank you for your interest in Aspire. How can I control my destiny through meditation? That's why I listen to you and others. I am trying to be a better person and to control my destiny more. Chase, you need to give up listening to me then. I'm not interested in giving you a better destiny. And the teachings that I offer, while they would help you immensely in your destiny, you can't have that kind of motivation. If you have that kind of motivation, then you're going to find yourself in a great deal of difficulty, because that motivation is not the one that brings about insight or compassion or love. I'm not interested in giving you a better life. I'm interested in showing you the life that lives within you. I have nothing to give you but my little finger that is pointing to the way. I am just pointing. I am telling you, meditation is very, very important. It is the only way. You can be a philosopher. You can be in religion. You can do all of these things, but they are only intellectual efforts. The real way is through compassion and love, but you won't know what real compassion and real love is until you find the depth of meditation. But not a guided meditation, not the meditations where you are going someplace where you want to go that is pleasant. There are things about meditation that disturb people. For instance, as you start to meditate, you will start to realize how far away from love you and I really are. We have forgotten our way. We don't go into the way. We have forgotten everything that is substantial and meaningful. We forget. And we forget so quickly that we can't even remember the last time we were in some meditation where insight began to show us, in my case, your case, the error of our way. You can't control your destiny. Everybody has one. Jesus had one. Buddha had one. Lao Tzu had one. Everybody has a destiny. And to think that you can control it by being meditative or going into meditation even is dubious at best. We don't do our practice out of the fear of what will happen to us if we don't. We move into an authentic spiritual practice that we might transcend. And whatever it is I need to go through in that transcendence, in that uplifting, is the most important thing I can do. In fact, it is the only thing I can do. So when you are thinking in terms of what is real, what is not real, what is authentic, what is not authentic, you can only think in terms of thought, emotion, bodies, circumstances, things you can think. Meditation takes you away from thinking altogether. It is a state of being within you. It is not some thought one has that replaces another thought or will benefit you in some way. I was listening many years ago to NPR, and they had a bunch of these meditators from a Zen, Zendo in Maine. And they were talking about the whole thing of the benefits, trying to allure people into meditation. It'll lower your blood pressure. It'll help you sleep. You'll be more relaxed. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. All of this is horse manure, just pure horse manure. You may get benefits like that. I absolutely am sure you could. But that's not the reason we meditate. We don't meditate to have things go our way. That's not the way. We practice meditation for the sake of itself. Meditation is something that occurs in itself, upon itself, the way of the heart. You don't need a reason. I don't sit down every day and meditate for a reason, a purpose. Meditation is my lifestyle. And it helps if you are with someone who also has that. And if you can't, then you need to somehow find a way to have your lifestyle of meditation and accommodate your wife or whatever, your kids, in a loving way, whereby you get the respect of doing your meditation but not forcing it upon them. It's a fine line. I have found that for the most part, not in all parts, but for the most part, people who are married just can't do this because they have so many obligations, and it's very hard to turn the tide, as it were, because we live in a lifestyle. When you're married, you live in a lifestyle that is comfortable, convenient. It's orderly towards whatever accomplishments you need to have in your physical life. You don't have room for meditation. But to carve out room, Chase, is the art. Married or not, you have to set your intent, and you have to set it with compassion and love and gentleness. And I find that a lot of people that I have talked to over the years just aren't willing of that. So if you have a goal that meditation is supposed to bring you or give you, you better forget it now, because that is not the way. The way is through the heart. The way is of the heart. The way is the heart. You have to want love more than wanting what you think will give you love. And if you can't do that, then you will find your meditations very frustrating. You really will. I hope that helps you in some way. Please forgive me. Namaste. Yeah. Everybody has a reason. This will give you that. It'll make your teeth brighter. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Horse manure. Sometimes meditation is just hunkering down and not allowing the mind to influence, not allowing the emotions to flap all over the place. It's about a bigger picture, much bigger, and it isn't personal either. I watched a TED talk on this. A woman, the scientist as she called herself, struggling with meditation, and it was really sad that she called it insight meditation. It isn't. Insight meditation is just what it means, to have insight and not to think. Insight does not come with thinking. Insight comes with compassion. It comes with quiet. It comes in letting go of thought and not wanting thought to influence. And it takes practice. Next question comes from Linda. She does not tell me where she lives. Listen to this one. This is really a good one. Is not goodness the sign of being spiritual? Can we control our lives through the goodness and make for good karma? Linda. Oh, and then she says, of course, through meditation. Again, motivation is an issue for Americans, for Western culture, Western thinking. We always do things in order to get some payback, something we want. And a deep spiritual practice is not about doing what we want. It isn't about that at all. It is about the way of the heart. It is done through the heart. Meditation in its truest form is nothing but the heart. It is allowing the heart to have its way in our life. And the problem with a lot of us, and most of us, is that we miss all of that because we are so busy wanting what we think we need to make us happy. We don't want to worry. We want a carefree life. You're never going to have a carefree life. I don't care if you're Gautam the Buddha or Jesus the Christ, you're not going to have it. There will always be trials and tribulations in this world. And if you are doing anything to try to get away from the circumstances of this world that your body brings to you, that your life brings to you, then you are missing the whole shamada. You're missing your life. It doesn't work that way. Don't believe me, just keep living the way you are, and eventually it'll become very obvious to you in a few thousand lifetimes that, hey, I can't avoid all this. Now, what is the alternative? Transcendence. If you are willing to transcend, if you are willing to go above and beyond the idea of right and wrong, dualistic thinking, if you are willing to transcend into your heart through meditation, you will start to realize, oh. That's how it's done. Oh. You come upon something that is so beautiful, something so exquisite that you cannot think it. It exists in you. It is not something you can think. It actually exists in you as a state of being. And it is very delicate and very beautiful, like a lotus blossom. Now, if you've ever been to India, you will notice there's these gigantic, beautiful lotus blossoms. But they are in great big pools of sludge, of slime, of excrement. It is absolutely impossible to describe the ugliness of the water they are in. But they rise above it, and they are nurtured from it, and they bring forth great beauty because it is their nature to be beautiful. The lotus blossom has many petals, and it's a constant unfoldment. It is the perfect image, an icon for meditation and spiritual development. The problem with most people is they are fine with alcohol and marijuana and drugs to control their lives. Hate and fear to control their lives. But they are not willing of love to reveal their life. Not control it, but to reveal it. Because they're not in control. And the sense of being in control, Linda, is what everybody wants. Oh, I can control this. I don't have to succumb to this, and I don't have to have that in my life. And you might be right, you don't. But you're not going to be able to deal with it with the means that created it. And this is very hard for human beings to understand. The means that created our devastation, our difficulties, is the same means we use to get rid of it, as it were, or to avoid it. You say, is not goodness the sign of being spiritual? No. No, it is not. Not at all. You think that being spiritual is some mamby-pambyism? Look at Jesus. Was he good? They called him good master once, and he said, why calleth me good? There is none good but God, he said. He got crucified. Terrible Friday afternoon. Was he good or was he bad? Did he deserve it or not? Buddha grew old and suffered from old age. His bones were creaking. His body was sore. He got tired of traveling. Finally, he laid it down. He went through a great deal of pain. If you have a human body, you're going to have human pain. We don't use the practice to avoid the inevitable. The practice of meditation is to live in the focus, the concentration of nothingness, to emerge out of nothingness into this world and to bring forth from that nothingness a great beauty, a great kindness. Not everybody appreciates it, Linda. Most people don't. They don't see the value of it. They don't care. It doesn't matter to them. What matters? What they want, and how to get it. and what they want and how to get it. So don't go into this idea that being spiritual means that you're good. There were a lot of things that Jesus said and did that, culturally speaking, were not good. Same thing with the Buddha. He left his wife and kids to become the Buddha. These things in our culture, in our society, well, they don't stand up very well. So don't think it's about being good. It's about being authentic. Oh, Linda, I could go on. Forgive me. I hope that helped you. I have no more time. Please forgive me. Namaste. We do a lot of assuming, don't we? The last question comes from Craig, and he does not tell me where he lives. I don't want to face my destiny. I don't want to face what I've done in this world, in this life. Do I have to, Craig? I don't know, Craig. I don't know what your karma is. I can only talk to you from where I stand, or in my own life, or in my students' lives. We are given a lot of grace in this world. Reprieve. A chance to really change our life, a chance to really mature. We are given that. We are given it so many ways and so many different styles. It is hard for me to believe and to think in terms of the idea that, we avoid. There is a grace period. I've seen people live their entire life in the grace of a great compassion, slipping the noose many, many times. There is an order to our life, genetically and in our DNA. And your genes play a great deal of the role of what is going to happen to you in your body, in your circumstances, in your psychology. Your psychology is hooked into genetics and DNA. If you start to live and plug into your emotionality, and most people do. So, it just depends. I think what you're asking me, and I could be wrong, is that, will this all catch up to me, what I've done? I think that's what you're saying. And the answer is yes, but how? I don't know. And I can't worry about that, and you shouldn't either. What you should be focused on within yourself is transformation, how to transform your life. How to change it through playfulness and compassion and love, kindness. Those are the things that you need to work upon inside yourself. So don't be concerned about maybe what you've done. Be focused on that which lives within you, the love that lives within you. If you can focus on that and keep that uppermost in your heart, in your soul, then something of love can reach you. Keep asking yourself every day, can love reach me? Can kindness reach me? And if so, how? And if not, why? Just keep looking at those things. Those are the things that are most necessary and most important. And if you do that, you'll find the way. If you do that, there will be a chance for insight. There'll be a chance for change. So be focused on that. And if you're worried about the guilt, the shame, all that, in the psychology of everyone is guilt and shame. And we try to avoid it through all sorts of means. And I don't want to get into that. It's, it has to do with drugs, alcohol, rationalizations, all sorts of stuff. Don't go there. Don't look for an excuse. Craig, look for the way. Please forgive me. Namaste. Great questions, huh? Really neat people. I want to thank them for their beautiful questions, and I want to thank you for listening. And you can email me at greg@aspire.org if you ever have a question that's on your pee picker. I'd love to hear from you. I'm out of here. I'll be back on the air tomorrow morning. Please, please, please forgive me, eh? Namaste.